It brought to my attention yesterday, although this is not the catalyst for the share per se, but it was brought to my attention that the RCA's convention over the weekend came to adopt a resolution. I'm not sure exactly when the original proposal was adopted. I heard it was adopted in January, but it came to adopt a resolution that the criterion of death in a human being of the halacha is the cessation of the activity of the brain stem. What exactly that means, we'll get into a little bit later, but that is very, very convenient for modern-day medicine, because modern-day medicine requires that in order to take a heart for a heart transplant, although the brain can be ceased to function, the heart must still be functioning. Okay, the heart must still be beating in order for the heart to be transplanted from the donor into the recipient. Therefore, if we accept the criterion of brain death, which precedes cardiac arrest as the criterion of death, can heart transplants in fact be permitted halakhically? If we say that cardiac arrest is the absolute definition of death in halakha, there is no possibility of halakha of having a heart transplant, at least where the donor is Jewish. The donor is a goy, perhaps we can kill him in order to save a Jew, but where the donor is Jewish, that is not permitted. In all likelihood, with a goy, it probably would not be permitted either. The question is, put it very bluntly, the question is whether the RCA is correct in accepting that definition or not. The question is this halakhically viable or not halakhically viable? And that is what we will see this evening. There's a handout here. Okay, the source for the source for all definitions of death in halacha is Gemara Yuma Daf Pei Hei, which you have here on top of your handout. Okay, the Gemara Yuma Daf Pei Hei is discussing what happens if one knows that the human being buried under an avalanche and it's Shabbos. Now, normally in a weekday, what I would do is I would remove the stone. But on Shabbos, one is not permitted to remove the stones because of the Isra of Mukta. One is not permitted to remove stones on Shabbos, to move them at all, because they are considered to be Mukta. What is the halacha in terms of moving the stones for Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos? Can one move the stones for this Pikuach Nefesh or not? Okay? So let's see the Gemara where it's underlined. Turn it up on. At Heichanu Bodin, you know what? Let me give you a little bit more background material. We're talking about one is allowed to move the stones to assume that there's somebody buried there underneath the rocks. The question is at what point, to be a little bit more accurate, at what point the person stops checking because he assumes that the person underneath is dead. Okay, that is the question involved. When do I know the person is dead and therefore I no longer allowed to move the stones because that does not apply? So turn up on it. The unwind by the car. At Heichanu Bodin, up to what point do you check? You check at Chotamo, up to the nose of the person who's buried under the avalanche. The Yeshua means some say you check up to the heart. Now, what's the obvious difference? We check to the nose, what are we checking for?
Breathing.
We're checking to the heart, what are we checking for?
Heartbeat.
Right, pulse. So says Gemara, what happens if you check? You found there are a whole bunch of people buried on the avalanche. You found that the top ones, the ones on top were dead already. Don't assume that the bottom ones are already dead. Why? Because there was a mice which occurred in Matzal Yonim Meisim. They found that the ones on top were dead, but Tachdonim Chaim and the ones below were still alive. So we have such a case in which occurred. Mice which occurred in history, and they found that despite the fact that people higher up in the avalanche were dead, and you would assume that the pressure would have killed anybody who was below, nonetheless they found that the people further below were still alive. So therefore, even if you find ones on top were dead, keep checking. Maybe you'll find somebody alive down below. Says the Gemara further, at the next place where it's underlined, Abu Inga Pikoch Nefesh, Afil Abu Shol Modei, wherever Abu Shol is not germane at the moment, the Ikar Chiyusei Bapeh, the primary source of life, or the primary proof that life still exists, is in the nose. You see, as it says, Kol Asher Dishmas Ruach Chaim Ba'afa. How do we determine who's alive? Anybody who has the breath of life in his nose. Rav Papa goes back to the previous machlokas, right? We had a machlokas, to where do you check? You check to the nose or you check to the heart. So says the Gemara, said, machlokes mi matzol amal. This is only a question when you started from the legs. So if you found the legs of the person protruding from the avalanche, from the mountain stones, and you started checking from the legs up. So then we have a machlokes. How far up can you remove the stones? Can you remove the stones only up to the heart? Or can you remove the stones all the way up to the nose? Machlokes mi matzol amal. So let's say first you uncover the bed, and you have the nose in front of you. Zebra came in the body layer. Once you checked up the nose, shuv ain't no tzarech. You don't have to go any further. You see that it says, kol asher nishmas rachayim biyapa. All the breath of life is to be found in the nose. So it says more clearly that the nose is the primary disorder. The question is, if you started from the bottom and reached the heart, is that sufficient, or do you still have to go up to the nose? Okay, that is the machlokes. Says Rashi, again in the underlying part, Ahechun Ubodin, in Dom Lameis, if a person looks like he's dead, this is a very important Rashi, in Dom Lameis, She'enu Meizes Eivoro, he's not moving at all. Ahechun Umifakeach Lidat Ha'emet, we're up to where, in truth, is one allowed to remove the stone. Achotomo, up to his nose, Vimein Chiyus B'chotomo, there's no life in his nose, She'enu Motzi Ruach, there's no breath, Vadai Meis, clearly dead. Another important Rashi. Vadai Meis, he's definitely dead. The Nichael leaving there. Haki Garcina, Amra Pava, Machlokas, Milamal, Lilamato. Machlokas, Danach Tanoi, the Machlokas of these Tanoi. The Mara, Mara, Akhotam, Libo. One of them says you had checked to the heart. The Mara, Mara, Akhotam, the other one says you checked to the nose. Milamato, Lamala, it's talking about where you're starting from the bottom and working your way up. Shemosa derech magalos of chili. You point his legs first. Uvoli volachlap yirosh, and you keep on checking, going up towards the head. Demar amar, one of the shitos holds, the libo yesh lachim yesh bochil. In his heart, you can already tell if he has life or not. Shenishmosa dofekeshon. That's where the life pulsates. That's where the heart is. That's where life pulsates. You can tell. Umar amar, the other mandamar holds ad chotomo. You have enough. This is the most important part of Rashi. Pass your hand up over here. Tomorrow, Mar Achotomo, Zimlin Dein Chius Nikar Belibo. Occasionally, the life breath or the life force is not recognizable in the heart. The Nikar Bechotomo is recognizable in the nose. What does that mean? How would you not recognize it in the heart? What kind of a case could we be talking about? A very faint heartbeat, which is not recognizable. Somebody, let's say, is a very faint heartbeat, or somebody's very fat, it's very hard to get a pulse. So then you go to the nose, because the nose is a clear indication of whether the person is still alive or not. This is the source of all halachos concerning pikuach nefesh, what defines death. We see clearly that the definition of death, according to Mandama, who holds up to the nose, who is the mandama we pass in life, is as long as a person is breathing, he's alive. A person is breathing, he's alive. Now this raises a very interesting question. Artificial respiration. Suppose we took a dead body. Suppose we took somebody who died day before yesterday, and we put him on a respirator. And now we inflate and deflate the lungs. And we're keeping him going, breathing this way. Are we allowed to take him off the respirator? Or do we have to keep him breathing? The moment the body is filling the mechanical functions of breathing, is that considered to be alive? Obviously not. That's clear. But if that's the case, where do you draw the line? Suppose a person is breathing, but he's brain dead. Is that also considered to be breathing after death? Or is that considered to be breathing before death? That's right. Yes. Okay, so now let's see a little bit of the scientific definition. If you look at page 2, turn the page. The pages are marked. The brain consists of several parts. We're going to look through it. Let me just draw you a picture here. I'm not sure if I'm going to draw it exactly the way it's represented here, but here you have the spine. And here you have the, up here you have the rain set. And from the brain stem, you have nerves which go to the eye. Here's your eye. You have a nerve which goes to the ear. Not a very good ear, but you get the idea. And you'd also have ones which go to the nerve in the top layer of the skin. And the brain stem is also connected to the cerebrum. I don't know if I'm spelling it right because I'm not looking inside. But and there you have, I believe it's the cerebellum, the small brain. Okay, now let's see what each thing controls. Okay, the brain is in several parts. The two main parts are one, the cerebrum and upper brain, which controls consciousness, thought, understanding, memory, feeling, and voluntary movements. And two, the brainstem, which controls the transmission. Need another handout? There are a couple of extra handouts over there. And two, the brainstem, which controls the transmission to and from the rest of the body of all the functions of the cerebrum. The brainstem also controls vital functions such as swallowing, sleep, and waking cycles, and most important, respiration and a cardiac activity. Okay, let's skip down to where the line, the draw is on the line. The lungs are incapable of carrying out respiration unless activated by the respiratory center located in the brainstem. So the brainstem also controls, that's the most important for us, respiration. Okay, you don't need your cerebrum or your cerebellum to breathe. You just need your brainstem. That's all you need. If you get what's called a flat EEG, a flat response on brain waves in from the cerebrum, nonetheless, you can still breathe. That's called an irreversible coma. You're not going to come out of it. You're never going to be able to function like a normal human being, but you're still breathing. Like Karen Ann Quinlan did for many years. Your brainstem is still alive. You can still breathe. You can go on for quite some time. Let's get down to the next underlying part. As long as the heart is adequately supplied with oxygen, you know, I'll start from the beginning of this paragraph because it's important. Although the heart's activity is also regulated by the brainstem, the heart has in addition an autonomous system in the form of a natural pacemaker. As long as the heart is adequately supplied with oxygen, blood, and nutrients, it continues to be for several minutes, to several days, even outside the body. The autonomous activity of the heart is similar to the severed tail of the lizard as described by Maimonides. When the power of movement does no longer disseminate throughout the body's organs from one source and beginning. Now, the author, Rabbi Dr. Steinberg, who wrote this, pulled a little trigger to come back later on. He really, surreptitiously, put in a definition which is not necessarily halakhically accurate. If you'll note, he told us very clearly that the heart beating after autonomous respiration has ceased is considered to be just random movements of the body, jerks, which have nothing to do with any life. And he quoted a Rambam to that effect, too. That's not necessarily true. He's editorializing here. I'll come back to that point later on. Please bear that in mind. Okay, let's go down to the box. When the cerebrum ceases to function, a person lies motionless in bed and is no longer aware of its surroundings. Yet the vital functions, including autonomous respiration, without the aid of a respirator, regular heart function, digestion, and sleep and wake cycles, continue in an orderly manner. This condition, known as the persistent vegetative state, represents not brain death, but a state of life with altered consciousness. In contrast, when the brain stem ceases to function, vital life activities, including respiration, also cease. Without an artificial respirator, all other organs cease to function. This state constitutes total brain death and therefore organismal death. Let's skip down again to the line. Today, an artificial respirator can help the patient breathe even if the brain stem is no longer functional. That's a very big chiddush. Obviously, there's no longer any autonomous respiration. Nonetheless, the respirator can keep a person alive. We would tend perhaps to accept that this person is considered to be alive. Not necessarily so. Let's turn the page. It is possible today to accurately diagnose brain death, including brain stem death, by means of clinical examination and auxiliary tests.
Such tests include apnea tests. Is anybody here a doctor familiar with the apnea test? You want to explain it? Because I'm afraid I'll get it wrong.
I haven't actually done one, but it's really just looking for breathing. I mean, you basically take them off the respirator and look for spontaneous breathing.
But you can hook them up again afterwards.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Somebody told me there's another test, I don't know what it's called, in which they inject a radioactive material into the bloodstream. And they can see if that radioactive material travels to the brain or not.
The
brain scans.
So all you're doing basically is looking to see whether the patient has any spontaneous.
Okay,
breathing.
Does this brain scan measure brain stem death or brain death?
What it's measuring basically is circulation to the brain, with the thought being that if there's no circulation to the brain, then the brain is obviously dead. So it's measuring blood flow to the brain.
Okay. Such tests include apnea tests, cerebral blood flow studies such as radioisotope studies, Doppler tests and cerebral arteriograms, and electrophysiological examinations. Okay, all those big words mean that the doctors claim they can measure brain death, brain stem death. Okay, it's important to remember that doctors have made mistakes in the past. In 1971, an article was written by Rabbi Gedalia Rabinowitz of Hebrew Theological College and a Dr. Mordechai Konigsberg, I'm not sure who that is, in which they came to the conclusion that one can allow brain death as a criterion of death in halacha, even if we're talking about the cerebrum being dead, and that's measured by an EEG, not getting any electrical impulses. That is viewed today as being medically incorrect. A person can survive even if he has a flat EEG. A person can survive for quite some time even if a person has a flat EEG. So therefore, that definition, which they proposed in 1971, is no longer acceptable. So it's very important to realize that certain claims are made in the medical world, which will not necessarily be borne out by time, because these are all theories, and they can't be proven conclusively. But in this day and age, doctors claim they can recognize brainstem death by all these means. Now, all this is written by somebody who is pro using brain death as a criterion of death. On the flip side of the page, you come to Rabbi Bleier. Rabbi Bleier is one of the primary antagonists of the brain death opinion approach. Rabbi Bleier himself admits, like we mentioned before, it is also possible to attach a respirator to a person who has already died and to cause the lungs to be artificially inflated and deflated. This does not mean that person is alive. In terms of Jewish law, it is not necessary or even permitted to intubate a corpse, make a corpse breathe. It is spontaneous respiration, as distinct from artificial respiration, which serves as a criterion of life. However, yet patients who maintain an artificial respiration are very much alive. The indicator of cause of life is ongoing cardiac activity. It must be emphasized that the heart of a patient sustained on a respirator beats in an entirely normal, natural manner. The heartbeat is spontaneous. The respirator merely breathes for the patient. It does not cause his heart to beat artificially. The function of a respirator is precisely the same as that of the iron lung machine used to sustain polio victims incapable of independent respiration. There can be no doubt that iron lung patients who are fully conscious and capable of engaging in many meaningful activities are alive. Similarly, a patient maintained on a respirator must be considered to be alive even if he is in a coma, since the comatose state is not synonymous with death. Physicians who advocate a policy which would permit them to pronounce such a patient dead do so on the basis of an entirely different criterion of death, in other words, brain death, a criterion which is not accessible from the point of Jewish law. And it goes on in this way. So here we have presented to us, in a nutshell, the very basic disagreement between the two opinions. The basic disagreement is, how do we approach death? Everybody agrees that death means cessation of respiration. You're no longer breathing. Does that cessation of respiration mean cessation of autonomous respiration, voluntary respiration, or does that mean cessation of all respiration, even respiration which is caused by a ventilator, by an artificial lung? Now, everybody agrees, as Rabbi Black just mentioned, once a person is dead, you don't have to make him breathe by putting on a machine. But everybody agrees that a patient who has polio and can't breathe and is on an iron lung is considered to be very much alive. And you can't take him off the iron lung. You're killing him, you transgress Aveir Vatiha. The question is, this fellow is in between. The person whose brainstem is dead, but nonetheless, he's on life-sustaining machines. What is his status in halacha? His heart is beating. There's a machine which is breathing for him. Is he considered to be dead or alive? Now, we could just stop here. The question is, it seems that there's only one source of Gemara, which is the Gemara in Yuma, for which we have no resolution on this issue. What are we going to do with the Gemara in Yuma? The Gemara in Yuma says, when he stops breathing. This person did not stop breathing. We don't know how he's going to measure it. But those poskim who hold, and we're going to see in a moment that they're very, very big poskim, hold that brain death is the criterion, brain stem death, hold that this person, if you would have found him in the street, he wouldn't be breathing. Right? Now that you found him in a hospital room on a respirator, it doesn't make him any better. The dead person is actually breathing. It's just breathing. Who's breathing because his lungs are inflated and deflated. That's in fact the question of the Gemara too. If you find somebody who's on a machine, if you find somebody whose breath has stopped, perhaps his heart is still breathing. How does the Gemara allow you to stop taking the stones off on Shabbos? Because Nefesh should indicate to us, as long as it's possible that the heart is still alive, we should have to continue to take the stones off. They say, shouldn't that be a proof from that Gemara that if a person has stopped breathing, even if his heart is still beating, that he's considered to be dead? So that's the question. How do we interpret the Gemara? Is it indicating cessation of breathing, or is it indicating that cessation of breathing is a siman, reveals to us that there's no longer any activity of the heart? That's basically what it boils down to. Yeah.
What about the time of the Gemara? In the time of the Gemara, the technology was not available to make to reverse the condition, whereas now.
Right, okay. That leads us to that next point, which is a very interesting point. Right now, in the time of the Gemara, they didn't know about mouth to mouth. They didn't know about CPR. They didn't know about many things. There are ways we can bring a person back to life after he stops breathing altogether. According to those who hold the Pashut Pshat Gemara, that once a person stops breathing, he's dead, what happens if we bring somebody back? What's the status in halacha? Now, this is not just limited to occasions where a person stops breathing, but a person who's undergoing open heart surgery. A person undergoing open heart surgery is on a heart lung machine. He's not breathing. His heart's not functioning. According to all definitions of halacha, he should be dead. What's halacha when you put him back? What's halacha of his wife? Does he have to remarry his wife? Would his wife now be able to go and marry somebody else because he died? We're going to put him back tomorrow, right? But he died in the interim. The question is, by the way,
is the surgeon Rotsea?
Right, is the surgeon Rotsea for putting him on the heart lung machine? And there was one other question in this regard. A Kohen Gadol, for instance, would be a better question. A Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry an almono. So if you did perform surgery on a Kohen Gadol, open heart surgery, and then he brought him back, he'd be allowed to live with his wife again. Now, although these questions seem to be somewhat strange, they're actually asked by ancient poskim. Why? Because we have two cases like this in history. Can anybody think of any of the cases?
Well, one of the cases is the Gemara that says that 2 to 9 lost their heads, killed each other or something.
I'm all right. Yeah.
And then brought back to life.
Kam Rabba v'shachti Rabbi Zeira. Rabba on Purim got up and shachted Rabbi Zeira. Now, some unfortunately don't take this more literally, but many do. So the next day, Rabba felt bad about putting Rabbi Zeira to death, so he resurrected him. He brought him back to life. So the poskim asked, what's the status of Rabbi Zeira's wife? Did Ray have to remarry his wife? She was still married to him. What's her status? A similar case in halacha. Well, we're going to think of another case. Not from Gemara this time, from Tanakh. Elio. The question is, many, many Achronim discuss, even Rabbi Chana discusses, whether the wife of Elio is allowed to get married. Is she considered to be still married to Elio? He went away. He became a malach, let's say. Is she muteris or not muteris? Similarly, by the Ben Shunamis, Elio was a Kohen. Was Elio allowed to come into the room and bring the Ben Shunamis back to life or not? Right? Assuming it's because, no, forgetting for a moment, it's because Nefesh. Assuming he could have done it from far away. So is he allowed to come into the room and be matame for the Shunamis or not? All these questions are discussed by the poskim because they are precedent for the issue involved. So we'll get back to that later on. But that's the question. How would Chazal regard this moment, a person that sees breathing, a person who's on a heart lung machine, is he alive or dead at that point in time? And what happens if he comes back to life? As a more general question, in fact, we can ask, what happens if by Tzias HaMetim? Now you die, married to somebody. When you come back to Chiyas HaMeshmer, he still married her. Or he'd have to remarry her. She left to marry somebody else. What happened to Lossi Bubble? What's the situation
anybody,
going to be?
Anybody that's married in Almada.
What?
Anybody that's married in Almada.
That's right. Does she go back to her first husband, or does she go to the second husband? All right, so those questions don't concern us so much because we'll find out when the time comes. But this all falls into the category of the discussion which we're discussing tonight.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Yeah, what did you say?
Depends on the development of the soul. Whether it goes to the first wife or the second.
Okay, that's less halachic.
Yeah.
All right, now, there's machlokas going back a few hundred years. Machlokas between the Chacham Tzvi and the crazy place. What's the halacha of a chicken which has no heart? The chicken which has no heart is considered to be a trait or an avela. Let's say the heart has been ripped out and you shech it very quickly. Right? While the hearts are just ripped out, still flailing around, you shech. Is it a trait or an avela? And there are a few nafkaminas. Nafkaminas are the vituma, right? And the avela is mitame. Makes a person come into contact with it impure. A trefa is not mitame. If you shech an animal to the trefa, despite the fact that you're not allowed to eat it, nonetheless, it's not mitame. And there's a machlokas between the Chacham Tzvi and the crazy place. One of them holds that an animal without a heart is considered to be dead. The other one holds it's about to die, but it's not yet considered to be dead. So if it's already considered to be dead, then when you shecht it, you're just shechting a dead animal. Remains an avela. Was a dead animal already. If the animal's about to die, then it's a trefa, it's not yet dead. Then when you shecht it, it's not going to become tame subsequently. It's not going to be mitame subsequently. So there the Chacham Tzvi says, and it brings a lot of proofs, that the heart is the primary source of life in an individual and in an animal. And he explains why. He says because the heart is the source of all breath in the body. And that's why Chazal said that when you cease breathing, it means you're dead because your heart has stopped functioning. Because the heart is what causes the breath to go back and forth. And since you no longer are breathing, it's a proof positive that your heart is no longer functioning. We know this to be medically untrue. We know that the heart doesn't control respiration. The heart controls the blood flow to the lungs, but the heart does not control the breathing per se. However, the Chacham Tzvi did hold that, in fact, the heart is the source of life. Now that we know that medically this is not true, that the breath is not connected to the heart, but in fact it's connected to the brainstem, does the halacha change? So here we come to a little bit of a tangential discussion, but important nonetheless. There's a Gemara in Shabbos, which says you're allowed to kill lice on Shabbos. Why allowed to kill lice? Does anybody know why? What? No, it's not for that. It's just not comfortable. Gemara says because lice spontaneously generate. They reproduce asexually. The question is, we know that that's not true. We know that lice reproduce just like any other animal. They reproduce sexually. The question is, does the halacha change? When the Gemara says that lice, you don't kill lice on Shabbos, do we now say you're not allowed to kill lice on Shabbos? Now that we know Chazal were, so to speak, incorrect in terms of the scientific fact, does the halacha change with mana there or not? So the Pachad Yitzchak, who was an Italian in the 17th century, of Yitzchak Lampronati, writes that the halacha does change. Now that we know that Chazal did not understand the facts correctly, the halacha does change. And those poskim who say that the determination of death is based on the brain, oh, the Chacham Tzvi was wrong. Chacham Tzvi didn't know the medical facts. Therefore, now that we know that respiration is controlled by the brainstem, not by the heart, therefore what determines death? The brainstem, not the heart. However, other achronim, Michta Milio is one of the achronim discussions at length, but I was speaking once to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. They told me that if he was around at the time of Yitzchak Lampronati, he would have put him in Cherem. He says that it's impossible to state that Chazal made a mistake in Halacha. Even if Chazal made a mistake in facts, they didn't get the scientific facts correct. Nonetheless, Chazal cannot make a mistake in Halacha. If you find a Halacha in Gemara, says XYZ, that's true. Because Chazal, Kol Divrayim, the Ruach HaKodesh, everything they spoke, they were divinely assisted in determining. There's no way they made a mistake. If, in fact, the scientific data is wrong, then that's not the reason for the halacha. There's another reason for the halacha. But that is, in fact, the case. The halacha remains the way Chazal dictated it. Now, there is another tangential machlokas, which we won't go into tonight. Did Chazal actually know the scientific fact? Some Achorim go so far as to say, although Chazal say in the Gemara that they spontaneously generate, they didn't really mean it. They meant they seem to spontaneously generate. Others say that Chazal did mean that Chazal did in fact understand incorrectly, but that halacha does not change nonetheless. But in fact, most Achronim are of the school of thought that the halacha doesn't change despite the fact that it seems that Chazal made a mistake in science. The question is, can we extend that to Chacham Tzvi? Chacham Tzvi is an Achron. 18th century Achron lived in Germany, in Amsterdam. Can we in fact say that he didn't make a mistake? That he was Medav of Ruach HaKodesh? Not necessarily. Even though the Chacham Tzvi brings proofs to his position from Rishonim, it not doesn't necessarily prove the point 100%, so therefore we can't rely on the Chacham Tzvi either way. In other words, we can't assume that the Chacham Tzvi made a mistake and worried to have known that the brainstem is the cause of respiration. He would have paskin that the brainstem is the determining factor of death. Nor can we say that since the Chacham Tzvi said that a heart activity is the final determination of death, that even though he misunderstood the scientific fact, we can rely on him in saying that cardiac arrest is the termination of death. Chacham Tzvi is basically out of the picture because we don't extend that courtesy of saying, courtesy of infallibility to an Achron. An Achron can make mistakes. So the Chacham Tzvi is not reliable in these terms, it would seem.
Can we say that even about the Chazal, that there's a Gemara that says that when they say that when we disagree with the Goyim in terms of scientific facts, we should believe the Goyim?
There are such Gemara. Today is Tafiyomi. But that doesn't necessarily mean that luck changes. It just means that science, the scientific fact, we can accept from the Goyim. Okay, it's a very important distinction. In science, we accept what the Goyim say. In halacha, whatever Chazal were Mekabel, that's what remains halacha. This question of what the definition of death was brought in front of Reb Moshe. It was brought in front of Reb Moshe twice, in 1970 and in 1986. And here we have the truth of Reb Moshe Feinstein. And the question, this is, I really have to be honest with you, I find it somewhat strange. But all the Achronim after Reb Moshe, now remember, this is only within the past 20 years, are arguing back and forth in how to be Mitzayik, what Reb Moshe's position was out of the Tshuva. Now, in my opinion, this is a little bit exaggerated. Reb Moshe, as great as he was, is an Achron. One can't be Mitzayik to Reb Moshe and come to a basic conclusion halachically as a result. But many poskim have done that. Among them, Rabbi Tendler, the son-in-law. Among them, Reb Shol Yisraeli from the Rabbanut Yerushalayim. And others have been Mitzayik and Reb Moshe and come to certain conclusions. We'll see if their conclusions are in fact correct or not. But it's difficult to accept the process which they're engaging in and of itself. But let's go through these two tshuvas very quickly. In number 5, page 5 is the earlier tshuva from 1970. In this earlier tshuva from 1970, the Moshe says, in the first box, Avol emes vaday shelo zeh shepasa kamoach lifolhu miso. The truth is clear. If the heart says, if the brain stops, it doesn't indicate death. The kol zman shu noshem, as long as he's alive, breathing, he's alive. Rak zeh shepasa kamoach lifol pulaso, the fact that the brain has stopped functioning, hudavar shiyotu, something which will bring about death, eventually he will stop breathing. The Efshar, nonetheless it's possible. Kema Chadainu Chai, since he's still alive, Sheikha Mine Sami Bolam, there are types of drugs in the world, may doim linchi either those which are known to men, or Shee Adai Enamiduim, or which are not known to men, Sheyasu, which will do, Shamach Yachzor Lifol, that the brain will come back to Lifol for itself to function as it originally was functioning. The Chain, in addition, Shayach Lispal Hashem Yisbarach, one can daven, Sheyirafenu, that Kosh Baruch Hu should heal this sick person. Shurak the Chashivus Chole El Masukan Shurashayim Lisbalel. He's only considered to be a Chole and a Masukan and one is allowed to daven for it. Below Shachashivus face, we don't consider him to be dead. Shasu Lisbalel means Neshul Tchil Shurak, in which case it would be also to daven because it's a fool of Dad Tchilah. Shulachim Pashul, therefore it's clear Shahorgo Rotseach. Somebody who kills this person who's brain dead is a Rotseach, the murderer, the Chayev Misa. It's chayef to be put to death. Im leka chisar na machit v'moach, if there was no trapus in the moach. Does anybody know what one of the trapus in the moach is? What constitutes a trapus in the moach? The brain is punctured. Both the skull and the membrane of the brain are punctured. That's considered to be a trapus. Okay? We're talking about here someone who has some disease of the brain, which didn't make him a traper. Didn't give him a mortal wound. It only caused the brain to become sick. If a person suffered a mortal wound and as a result is brain dead, you're still not allowed to kill him, but you're not chayav mis if you kill him. That's the difference between killing a person who's a gozei, a person who's dying, and a person who's a traper, a person who's undergone a mortal wound. If you kill a person who's dying, they stone you. If you involve yourself in euthanasia, you're put to death. But if you kill somebody who's a traitor, even though you transgress an iser, basically doesn't put you to death as a result. Okay, you transgress an iser, but not an iser which gets capital punishment. The laws come back more post him she has simon chilus b'moach. No, it was never mentioned with more post him that there is any simon of death which has to do with the brain. It's not possible to entertain the thought that nature has changed. The Gabi me Chazal, that even days of Chazal, the brain function as in our day and age. And all the life force of a person came from the brain. When we call Makom, nonetheless, a person is not considered to be dead when the brain stops. It's clear that this is the case also in our day and age. And then Ramosha goes out to discuss what exactly the breath test, which Gemara is talking about, determines. We won't go into that right now. In 1970, though, it's clear what is Ramosha saying? Brain death does not mean death. However, at that point, science was not yet so advanced. They couldn't distinguish between brain dead and brain stem dead. That distinction didn't yet exist. The question is, did that change over the years? But Ramosha Seer says, in 1970, brain death is not death, and therefore, the opposite is heart transplants. In Ramosha's classic terminology, it's heart transplants is a double murder. You're murdering the donor, and you're murdering the recipient. Why? Because the person receives a heart transplant that day and age, in the 70s, would generally not live for more than a few days. That was in 1970. Let's turn the page and look at the other shulchan. Right, but you're putting in another, so it's another heart, but that other heart.
But if holding that you're taking out the heart instead, he said we're going to take the heart out without regard to how long it's going to live.
Well, that's a good point. We'll get that later on. Okay, I'll come back to that point you're making later on.
In 1970, how did he view heart surgery, bypass surgery?
Open heart surgery, he didn't discuss it. It's not known. It's not discussed English much. Now, I made a mistake before. If you look at page number 6, the truth is from 1976. Now, this bothers me tremendously. Why couldn't somebody ask, Ramosha died of 86, I think, was 1986 when Ramosha died? 10 years ago. Why couldn't somebody have gone to Ramosha and asked him his opinion? Well, Ramosha was lucid up to his final day. Somebody could have gone to him in 1986 and asked him, Ramosha, we want to pass him to Shiloh. What exactly is your opinion on brain death? Everybody's been dying to the true Ramosha might be. Now, this says something to me. Essentially to me, no, Rabbi Tendler claims his father-in-law told him, right. But Ramosha could have written it. Ramosha wrote Shuvahs for many years after 1976. It's difficult for me to accept that Ramosha said something and didn't write it, if he really meant it. But let's see what this Shuvah says per se, and this Shuvah's question is basically this box is where it all boils down. We were discussing previously in the tshuva people who had some sort of cancer or tumor which caused them their situation to degrade to the point that they can no longer breathe on their own, they're on a respirator. Now let's see what he says in this paragraph that's in the box. Although Inchus Shenechlu Bidei Shamayim Bezel Machlashi, they became sick because of some disease. Out of Elu Shehuku Betunas Drachim, those who were hit in a car accident. Well, he explains an accident, are they cars? By day, the Pila Mechalonos falling out the windows, the Chadome, etc., Sheira, which occurred, Shai Dei Skavsus Asovim Be'ezem Mekomo, by the nerves contracting in certain places, Asmuk and Lorea, which are near the lung, Ulukli Anashima, and near the vessels, which cause one to breathe, Eidim Chon Linchom, they cannot breathe. Ukshi Yavar Eidim. So when some time passes, Yin Shein Chomu, they will be able to breathe. Even since through this machine, those contracted areas will expand again. Since now, even though at this point in time they can't breathe on their own, the and we can't see in them any other vital signs. Perhaps they're not yet dead. The cable. Sha'ata omen, since you say, Rabbi Temper, since you say, Sha'ata ikon nisoyo, now there's a text. Sha'rofim gedolim ichonu levire, the great doctors can check, by the drikas ether lachuchis bagu, by injecting some sort of material into the body, by their eating through the cartilage, leida shenisa kakesher, sheyesh lamochim kol gu, to know that the connection of the brain with the body no longer exists. This material, I think it's a radioactive material, it's a brain scan, doesn't reach the brain. Who borrows anymore? Shum shaykh the goof, any connection to the body. The gam shakvar nirka v'amoach v'garmein, also that the brain is totally eroded, rotten. V'havi kahutos arosh b'koach, and it's as if the head has been guillotined off by force, decapitated. Shimkein. If that's the case, we must be machmir in these cases. Even though this person doesn't respond to anything, he's sick and needle in the skin, he doesn't respond. Even though he's not breathing at all, without the machine, you cannot decide he's dead until they make this test. If they see that there's a connection from the brain to the body, even though he's not breathing, Yizu Amachon Bepiv Azman Godo, they have to put the respirator in his mouth, even for a long time. Virak Shiyurai Deh Abdiko Shein Keshu Amachim Aguf, and only when they see through this test that there's no connection of the brain with the body, Yachlitu Aydeh Zek, and they decide through this, Shein Onoshim, that this person is no longer breathing, remains dead. How do you interpret this paragraph
for a motion? I'm leaving
it open. I'm not commenting.
How do you
interpret
it? What's he saying? Sounds like he's saying if you can verify by medical test that you have total brain death, including the brain stem, that the person is Neshat Lemay.
Okay, so that's what Rabbi Tendler says. It's clear from a Moshe Tshuva that if you can so verify that there's no connection between the brain and the body. In other words, the brain stem is dead. There's nothing going. There's a line right there. The brain stem is dead, then the person is considered to be dead. Clinically, halachically, you get the transfer is hard to somebody else. That's Rabbi Tendler's view. That's the view of the Rabbi Rashid in the Matir heart transplant in Hadassah Hospital in the land. Is anybody here doesn't accept that view? Besides myself. No, I want it in the words of Rav Moshe. Rav Aaron, forget about Rav Aaron. Let's talk about Rav Moshe. I'll give you a hint. 8 lines from the bottom. About paragraph.
Near
Towards the end. for more towards the end of the month. That's also important to you. But what?
I think the way this is interpreted, Kesley is talking about increased intracranial, increased pressure in the brain. That's what he means by co-op. It's pressure that here comes. He means constant radiation. Radiation raises that
That may be true, but that's not the point, the crucial point. Look at the next one. Okay, listen, I meant the last part of that line. Where does Hermitia say? What does he say? It says, Imkei yesh lonu rahachmir ve'elu ashenu margish kartu, etc., etc., and run this test. What's Ramesh saying? Ramesh is saying, Sitra is saying there's a test which can determine a person's brain stem is dead or not. If that's the case, even somebody who underwent cardiac arrest, you're going to have to run a brain stem test to see if their brain stem has died or not. Ramesh is saying be machmir to run a brain stem test. Ramesh should never say to be makel and rely on the brain stem test by itself.
Now, if they die, don't they do the test?
Oh, no, yeah, but they rely on the brainstem test, even if cardiac arrest does not occur. Ramesh is not saying that.
Except the traditional opinion of cardiac.
Now, there are two doctors who point out that this is very big chumrah. Now, by Dr. Steinberg and Dr. Abraham both point out this is a tremendous chumrah because they never do this in hospitals. Because after cardiac arrest has occurred, nobody checks the brainstem. There's no, the any time you have somebody who comes in cardiac arrest, you have to run a brainstem test. Nobody ever does it. Why we don't do it? We're not knocking it like Ramesha. But that's what Ramesha is saying. After cardiac arrest occurred, you still have to run a brainstem test. Now, let's go a little bit deeper into Ramesha. What is Ramesha saying here? And we brought this down all the way to the beginning when we quoted from Dr. Steinberg when he said he was editorializing. What does Ramesha say? Theoretically, if the brainstem is dead, then it's Uhutai's Rosh HaBakar. It's as if he's been decapitated. That's what Ramesha seems to be saying. Let's take a look at the Rambam on that, which is on the flip side of the page. Not on the flip side, rather on the next page. The Rambam is in this Mishnah in Olam. Erek Aleph, Mishnah Zayin. Adam, four lines at the bottom of the text. Adam Eino Matame Shetek Tinatro. A person does not generate tumah until he's dead. Afilu Mugliyar, even if a person is cut into pieces, even a person is dying, Zokik Leibu, still his wife is required to be Mitzyabemet, Rupotim Leibu, we'll go into the exact details. Let's just skip down to the last line. Hutsu Rashen, where somebody has been decapitated, Afo Bishem Bepharachti, even though the body is still moving, Tmei. Then there's immediate tumor because that's considered to be dead. Kigonas, no, Zonav Shalutoa Shim Farchetin. Because it's like the tail of a salamander which is still moving around. What does that mean? Says the Rambam, in the second column, 36, 8 lines to the bottom. Upei Shutsu Roshayim, what does it mean that the head has been cut off? Shutsu Roshayim, the head is separated from the body. Mephachosim, these bosses, they're still moving around. But Nuashim is Noim Eivoyim Acharamavit, the movement which the limbs are moving after death, koinos of pirkus. It's considered called pirkus. Umutah is al hilasam avrat, that's the Arabic word. Pishabal chai zeh, this noel is novel, in this creature, the tail still moves man ma'achar chash nichras. Sometime after it's been cut off. The yera zeh, lamitzas mine bal chai, to occur by some types of animals. Imroya koch ameniya mispashim chole evari. If the power to move, the power of movement was not spreading in all the limbs, the yisod mosa echot from one source and from one basis, eliyah muflag b'cholagu, but rather will be scattered throughout the body. So what does Dr. Steinberg infer from this, which he brought down at the beginning? Dr. Steinberg infers from this that when you have brain death, the brain stem is dead, that's, in Rabbi Tenberg's words, physiological decapitation. It's as if the head is cut off. There's no connection anymore. So since it's as if the head is cut off, like, if the brain is still, if the heart is still beating, That's also just like the tail of salamander still waving after you cut it off. That's not actual life. That's pirchus. You don't consider that to be life in halacha. That's what Moshe is saying. What Moshe is saying is the brain has rotted away. Then we could consider this to be hutas moshe b'koach. We consider this to be physiological decapitation, even though the head is still connected to the body. Since it's physiological decapitation, therefore the person is dead. Halachically, even though his heart is still beating. The heart still beating is only considered to be movement of the body after death. By the way, it's an interesting fact, somebody told me, discussed, that body cells continue to generate after a person has died. Not all body cells die at the same rate. Once a person dies halachically, clinically, there's a certain body cells which are still alive. Just there's a point in time which we consider a person dead despite the fact that there's still body cells which are alive. That's why a person's nails grow after it's dead for some period of time. I think somebody told me 2 months. They are also. Because not all body cells die the same way. So the fact that the body cells are still alive doesn't make a person alive. By pirchus. Just movement of the body cells without actual life being present. But there is the concept of pirchus lachamita. So if we would accept Rabbi Temler's Zichron Reb Moshe, then we could say that, in fact, this is true, that heart moving after death is considered to be just pirchus. But that requires 2 leaps of faith, which are very difficult to make. The first leap of faith is that we have to disregard any post-mortem who said that cardiac arrest is considered to be an absolute determinant of death. We have to say they were incorrect. And we'll see in a moment, Chaim Seifer holds that cardiac arrest is a determinant of death. We have to say that that's not true. We have to say the determinant of death is only when spontaneous respiration ceases. That's given number one we have to accept in order to accept Rabbi Temler's definition. The second thing we have to accept, which is more difficult to accept, is that physiological decapitation is equivalent to actual decapitation. This is not very easy to accept, because the Mishnah, from which they are drawing their diuk, is talking about somebody who's actually decapitated. There is no more head connected to the body. How do we know that when the brain stem stops functioning, that's considered to be the same case? Perhaps Chazal would hold, as long as the body is whole, that body is still alive. Especially because although in an animal, perhaps death is defined by something else, in a person, death is defined by when the neshama leaves the body. We're trying the whole time to find out when the neshama leaves the body. That's what we're trying to look for. We don't know if the neshama leaves the body when a person is physiologically decapitated. Maybe the neshama only leaves the body when a person is physically decapitated. Who says we can infer from animals to man to human beings? The Rambam, in the first place, doesn't even discuss physiological decapitation even by animals. But even were we to discuss physiological decapitation by animals, this long-distance decapitation, who says we can extrapolate to men and come up with the same conclusion? These are 2 questions which it's hard to see how they're resolved. Now, obviously, well, somebody who's a very, very, proposing a very, very high caliber, let's say somebody like the Rashba, who's a Rishon, could come and undertake to say, I have examined the sugya, and I see that in fact, in my opinion is that brain death is considered to be dead, because physiological decapitation is the same as physical decapitation. Rishonim do these things. Rishonim are entitled to do so. Achronim are not. Achronim cannot make that leap of faith, unless they have some basis in Rishonim. And here there is no clear-cut basis. That's exactly the problem which we have here. They want us to rely on Reb Moshe. The problem is, again, Reb Moshe is just saying to use this test for chumrah. If cardiac arrest has occurred, be machmir, make sure the brain stem is dead too. And you have the Reb Moshe in front of you. If you want to try to be medayik Reb Moshe differently, you're invited to do so. But that's what Reb Moshe is saying. Reb Moshe is saying that a chumrah used brain test as a factor, as a determinant. But it's not the sole determinant. We never saw that in Reb Moshe Feinstein. Let's go a step further. Let's take a look at the Chasam Sefer. Chasam Sefer is on page 8. There are 3 lines in the Chasam Sefer. It's getting late. We'll just see those 3 lines. In the box which I made here, the Chasam Sefer discusses how we know that breath is a determining factor in determining death, because he says that this is a Kabbalah, which we have, Allah must be seen either that breath determines whether a person is alive or dead. In the line which is underlined. This is very crucial, because even though, again, it's problematic to be Medayik and Achronim, that's exactly what they do. They're Medayik and Chasim Sofer. Chasim Sofer says like this. Avokol sha'achat shemuto kevin. Any time after a person is lying there like a stone domain, without any movement, veibo shum tfiko, he has no pulse. Vimachata vata neshima. If afterwards the breath ceases, we only follow the words of our Holy Torah, Shumay. He's dead. Loyally knows, so they can't leave him over. We'll leave out the rest of the line. Well, why is the Chasim Sofer saying this? Chasim Sofer is saying this because there used to be in the old days, back in the 1700s, that they were very afraid a person prematurely. A person would still be alive, just that he wasn't breathing because we couldn't have a temporary seizure or something like that. And perhaps he was still, the reality was still alive, and therefore one of the German dukes issued an edict that a mace has to be left for 3 days. Can't bury a mace for the first 3 days. Maybe he's still alive, couldn't see the blood, the flesh starts to rot. And the Jews are very upset about that because we're not allowed to be mailing us a mace. So solely necessarily blosso, so this is oraisa. Mendelssohn at the time wrote a tshuva in which he came to the defense of the German government. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden responded to him with very, very great an anger, let's say, with what? Yeah, empathy, good word. And refuted Mendelssohn point by point. Several years later, Chasim Sofer, about 20, 30 years later, the issue was reopened for some reason. This is what the Chasim Sofer is discussing here. Chasim Sofer is saying that Mendelssohn was definitely incorrect. We don't leave the body over. The moment the breathing stops, we assume that the person is dead. Now, what is Chasim Sofer saying? Chasim Sofer seems to be saying, open to you. What is Chasim Sofer saying the determining factors are? Are there any other determining factors besides cessation of respiration mentioned here or not?
Yes, no movement whatsoever
by
the heart.
Okay, it says there's no movement. There is no pulse. As Chasim Sofer learning, clearly the heart must be stopped. Right. That's what the Chasim Sofer seems to be learning. So the question is, how do Rabbi Semler, the Rabbi Nuz and others, how do they get out of this Chasim Sofer? You were Rabbi Semler. How did you get out of this Chasim Sofer? No, you don't want to do that. You want to use the Chasim Sofer and get around it.
It's a question of what are necessary conditions and what are sufficient conditions for that. And certainly if there's no pulse and there's no breathing, that those are sufficient conditions for death. But the question is it necessary to have no tefika?
That's right. That's exactly the point. They say that if the order in fact happens chronologically like this, the person, all kinds of same thing. If you find a person who has no pulse and there's no movement and then there's no breathing, so he's dead. But that doesn't mean that the Chasim Sofer holds that it has to be that there has to be cessation of movement and that the pulse has to stop. It could be the Chasim Sofer would hold that, in fact, stopping to breathe is enough. This is the case the Chasim Sofer is discussing is one and where cessation of movement and heartbeat stop before the person actually stop breathing. It's, by the way, very difficult to conceive of, but that is, in fact, the case Chasim Sofer is discussing. That's how they get out the truth of the Chasim Sofer. But again, the bottom line is that who knows? Who really knows what the Chasim Sofer really meant?
Ultimately, the word intention was. The dogma then is trying to keep over the body as
right.
possible. He's trying to get them in as quickly as possible. But you see that he takes all these conditions nonetheless.
Right.
He's not rushing it. He seems to be waiting for all of them.
Right. Well, then that's the right.
Because if he was rushing it, he would have said one or the other.
That's right. So who really knows? It could be that that's what the Chasim Sofer's intent was. We don't know either way. Ultimately, we come 150 years later trying to be back in the words of Chasim Sofer. Maybe he meant this way, maybe that way, but we're not dealing with a Drabbanan here. Dealing with a Suffolk with Sichel. That's what it boils down to. A Suffolk where we're going to murder a person now or not. And I don't know. It's hard. Obviously, somebody, there are certain folks who hold that they can be Machriyah. but it's a very difficult, you have to be a very big place in order to hold that you know that this is not going to be something to tikkun. That you know that chazal meant stopping to breathe, spontaneous respiration. You know that even if a person is on a respirator and his heart is beating, his neshama is gone. That's a very big leap of faith. I don't know, in my opinion, it's hard to accept that. I'm not somebody who can pass in the shiloh. I don't think any achron can pass in the shiloh. Even Reb Moshe perhaps can pass in the shiloh, but the idea that Reb Moshe doesn't necessarily seem to be correct. So therefore, in the final analysis, I don't see how to do it. I don't know. I have all the literature here. I have the Rabbanut's Truva. Rabbi Tendler's Truva. Actually, I have it home. And I have, you know, the Truva. Rabbi Rabinowitz's Truva from much earlier. Everything is here. I don't know how to respond to that question. I don't know how. I read it all, and I can't understand it. However, next week, we'll come back a little bit more to organ transplants, and we'll see. I actually didn't get addressed the question of the open lung surgery directly. Mirza Hashem, I'll get back to that next week, but I'd encourage you all to come back and bring your friends too. If you can just do me a favor and fill out, those people who haven't been here before, if you can just fill out the questionnaire, I'd appreciate it.